Hello, my name is Aisha Conte. Thank you for joining me on this podcast today. I am interviewing Miss Nana Opuku Ajiman. This podcast is a project emanating from the Black Women and Political Leadership class at Cornell University, taught by Professor Kara Boyce Davies. Thank you.
So the first question up for you is, tell us who you are, your leadership story, and how did you come to leadership?
Well, this will take all day. Do you have all day?
No, I don't.
You don't have all day? Well, who I am, I'm Nana Opuku Ajiman. I've worn many hats, mostly in academia. Mm-hmm. I'm a professor of literature. I've taught mostly, if not all my life, at the University of Cape Coast, various positions, both administrative and academic, finally becoming the vice chancellor of the university. And yes, talking about leadership position, also being the first woman vice chancellor in Ghana. Then going on to become the minister for education. And that was really when my political career picked up. Okay,
wow.
Yes, because I was invited. Well, political career as in national politics. But as we all know, there are politics, there's politics everywhere in academia, especially. We are good at that. So.
Yes.
So, but in terms of, you wanted to see, to hear my leadership style. I don't think I have like a straight jacket style that I apply, you know, regardless. I think the style will depend on where you are. But generally, I do have a fundamental principle, which is to respect everyone, to recognize that you are not alone, to recognize that other people also have views that may agree or disagree with yours. But that it doesn't matter. The point is that the people following you or the people that you are expected to lead may not even be following you. They may be beside you, in front of you, around you, everywhere.
Yes.
We'll just use the expression following. You know, but I think that even as you use the word following, you must realize that, yes, you've been isolated in a sense to lead. But then, you see, you are not leading according to what you want. Then you could have gone by yourself. It's according to what the people want and according to maybe what the people are and what they can be. So it is a question of listening. It's a question of respecting. It's a question of also making your own point so clear that others may come to share in the vision that is propelling your own leadership agenda at any given time. And I can give hundreds of examples. I just know that you don't have a lot of time.
Thank you so much for walking us through from, like, I guess your professional journey, starting off as like teaching at the University of Cape Coast to your position now. I think you have like a remarkable journey, and also like all your beautiful lessons of leadership. So I guess as a follow-up question, you know, are there issues you're able to address better as a woman? Do you use a gender lens when solving problems, you know, especially like being in a male-dominated political environment? How did you like use your perspective as a woman to like make some change and impact, you know, let's say the education, while you was an education minister, for example?
Well, this is an interesting question, and I've been asked same or similar questions. You know, how did you do this because you are women? We are a woman. I think it's rather the public that must see what I'm doing and deduce conclusions from it. But to be very, very frank, Aisha, at times like that, I'm not conscious whether I'm a man or a woman. All I see is that there's a problem and I'm trying to solve it. And I'm trying to get many people to come and see how I see the problem, how they also see the problem. Can we go on a common platform? This is what I think. What do you think? Do we all acknowledge there's a problem in the first place? And yes, it is very real, extremely real. I'm not putting aside the issue of gender. Yes, you know, even when I was applying for the position of vice chancellor, I competed with five different guys. Okay. I was the only woman in the race. And of course, people have said, no, we are not ready for a woman. A whole lot of comments. I didn't think they were right. And therefore, I never took it to heart. I didn't think it was a question of whether you are ready or you are not. I feel I'm ready to apply for the position. And that's what it is. So I never allowed myself to be distracted by those comments. I didn't think that they were a factor in the application. When the call for the when the application came out, it didn't say don't apply if you are a woman. So who are you to tell me that I cannot do it because I'm a woman? I've been on the campus with you. Maybe I studied with you. I've worked with you. So I mean, I don't work. You don't tell me what I'm worth or what I can do. And I think a lot of these things come from my childhood. Actually, I never even thought closely about that till very recently. Because I come from a home, I have brothers, I have sisters. We all have the same chance. I never heard any conversation among my parents about what girls could do or what boys couldn't do. And I feel that to be fair, I think my parents even spent more money and resources on us, the girls and the boys. It's my brothers who should be complaining, and they are not. So I didn't have that experience. And I keep saying that maybe the first time I went to a co-ed school, that I was conscious I was in a co-ed school, was when I got to the university. I was in girls' schools before then. So in girls' schools, girls do everything. You are in maths, you are not, you are a leader, you are not. And it had nothing to do with whether you are girls or boys, because there were no boys there anyway, And at the university, I've even written about it. I think I was too old for anyone to tell me what I could do or what I couldn't do. I've come to the university to study, and I got a lot of support from my professors, mostly male. And I always salute them wherever I go. They were very keen on what I was doing. They will support me, they will praise me, they will guide me. And a lot of my mentors have been male. And I'm very, very thankful about that, I think it just starts with the self, who you are, what you want to do. Yes, the obstacles will be there. But what are those obstacles? Sometimes people tell us societal pressures. And I said, I'm part of the society. And this is where I want to get to, And if you have negative vibes about what you think I cannot do, I don't think I should allow that to direct me.
That's true.
I will try. Let me do it. Let me get there. Let me fail. Let me pick myself up. And I don't think it's because somebody decides that I can do it or I cannot do it. And at least give me a better reason. Don't tell me because I'm a woman. I'm an African woman. I know my history. I know what African women have done in the past. We are not grounded in idyllic retirement. We don't have a concept of a woman doing nothing. It's not in my family. It's not in the market. It's not on the farms. It's not on the beaches. So where did this kind of thinking come from? That's all of a sudden there's something a woman couldn't do.
That's
Where
true.
in our traditional education? Why is it that women don't do anything? We have a gender role, we have our gender role differentiations, yes. But nobody said one was of more value. It is important. It's all these education we've had that is messing our minds up and creating problems that don't need to exist. For me, that's what it's I put the blame at the doorsteps of education and religion. They are put in traditional religion, there are women who are priestesses. There's no fuss about whether a woman can be a priest or not. In the traditional army among the Amazons, there were women at the forefront, even in something as terrible as fighting. We are in industry, we're everywhere. So you brought education and then you favored the men because in your own country, when you were bringing the education, your women weren't go they were not even voting, they didn't have a voice. So why should I accept that? I don't think it is very helpful. So I think you just have to look around you. I live in Ghana. You came to Ghana. How many women were just sitting down doing nothing? Even if she has to put her baby on the back and carry water on her head and sell. You saw that.
I did, yes.
Yes. Are these weak women? How did we become weak?
There's no
Who
weak
can
women.
bear children? Who can bear children and raise them and be weak? Who said that?
Not possible.
So I just thought that, As I said, it's a long story. And if you have the whole day, I have time for you.
Wow, I feel like I just learned so like a lot of information from you. And I think some people, they assume that when women operate as leaders, they operate from a state of like emotion, and like they don't think logically as men. So I guess as a follow-up question to like a lot of the amazing things you were saying, do you think there's a difference in the way women lead and the way men lead, aside of inherently both women and men being capable?
You see, no, I think that there's a history to all of this. Okay,
Sure.
in my own country, for example, we, as I said, we have, there's no society, there's no group without education, because that's the way which you induct people into the life flow of the community into which they are born. But where you have a system that is imposed that valorizes the men and leaves the women behind, after a time, it creates a certain culture of making people believe that this is what it is. Because the younger generation may not have any idea of what it was like. And that is why studying history is very important, to know who you are, to know where you have come from. And therefore, when with time, it is the men who are given the opportunities and they are the ones who are empowered. And it goes on for a long time. It creates an opportunity. It creates a situation where they feel that they have the power to do everything. And they're encouraged to do so. As I said, in religion, in education, and so on. In Ghana, for example, the education did not come for women, it came for men. So when this has happened for 100 years and more, and they know that, oh, they are the ones who go to the office and work and bring home money, and you are the one who stays at home, and you may work harder and so on, but how is it measured? It's as if effort is only measured in monetary terms. It creates a certain sense of power, true or false, but it is there. And therefore, they get the opportunity to be able to make decisions, to express power in ways that excludes the women. And I think that that becomes a way in which we describe men experimenting with power. And we think it's okay. And because for a long time you haven't seen women in that position, once they move into that position and they exercise power the same way they have found it, because it is so different. Because you're a woman, you are not even expected to be there in the first place, let alone. So then your use of power in this, in an identical way, will be labeled differently. And I think this has a way of affecting many women in leadership positions. Either they don't even want to be leaders when they know that they are capable. They don't want to be called names just for doing the right things. And therefore, I think a lot of them may power into doing, I don't know, into having a different style, if I may use the word, So then, but I also believe that depending on what our own experiences have been, I was made Minister for Education, and I'll go to the rural areas, rural schools, and I notice the environment they are learning in, and I notice there are no teachers and so on and so forth. Yes, there've been males there. Maybe they didn't do anything. But maybe when I see those young people, I see the young people in my own family. I see the faces of people in my own family. And I ask myself, so if all these people came, all this were my village and there's no order here, how are these kids going to turn out? So I think that who we are, what our experiences have been, male or female, it can go either way, Yes, so I think that maybe I've read literature about, oh, women have a certain emotional attachment. Why aren't the men emotional too? Everybody is emotional. Everybody is intellectual. So what is this that we are all emotions? It's almost like going back to the days of the Senghor poems and saying that, oh, Africans are emotional and white people are intellectual. Something foolish like that. What does it make sense? We all have everything. Every human being has the emotions. Every human being has the intellect. We are a combination of many things, you know. So I don't think that, I don't believe, for example, that is just a question of appointing somebody because she's a woman. I don't think that's adequate. Appoint somebody who is competent, appoint somebody who can get the job done, and support that person to get the job done.
Yes.
We are not flower pots. We are not handbags or decoration on the wall. So they just throw one woman in and say, oh, the committee is supposed to be composed of 9 people, one of whom should be a woman. So there's one woman there. That for me is ridiculous. Why don't we have 8 women and one man?
Yes.
You know, because that at least. So why are you always going with the minimum? So, you know, to answer your question frontally, yeah, I know studies have been done how women are able to be, you know, to use the emotion, but I just feel that a lot of women are able to achieve more because we know what it is like not to have that. We know what it is like not to have the kind of power that helps reduce our own burdens. And once we are in a position to affect that, we want to use it. We want the effects to go as far as possible. You know, so if I'm there, I don't have a chance. I never had many women don't have a chance to go to school or whatever. Now I'm in a position to affect that.
Yes.
I'm going to use it to ensure that they also have a chance. Not to use it in such a way that, oh, because you're a woman, you can get in. I think that's wrong. But to put the structures in place so she can get in on her own steam. That's how she can build her confidence. And know that nobody threw anything at her, but that she earned it. But if you don't even give an opportunity for that person to earn it, then where will she go? You want to just appoint her as a token. I think that's an insult.
Yes.
You know.
Well,
you know, there are women who work well. There are men who work well or not. There are women who work well or not. It's just that we've had too many men in positions of power. We don't have enough of women in positions of power. And yet we want to craft who they are and what leadership styles they should bring. All of these are defeating. So it's as if I'm a woman, then I should use the style that somebody psychologist has described somewhere. I don't think that's helpful. How many of us are now, that already you have a theory for us? When we are in the tiny, tiny minority, how are we going to grow when these restrictions are placed on us, even as we want to move up? How many people, how many put restrictions in the parts of the guys?
Yes.
You know.
Wow. I just have to continue thinking about what you said. Like, I think you're educating so many young women about, you know, like, achievements to leadership, despite what society is telling you about being emotional. About
you should just know that you're also part of this. Do you accept this or not? Does it fit? Must you go being emotional? What does it mean? You should go crying at every board meeting or what?
Yes.
You know, what is it that you are supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because you are, so you must go. That way, you've already allowed yourself to be boxed in. You see? You've allowed yourself to be boxed in. You cannot even be yourself. Maybe that's not your nature. So are you afraid that, oh, if I act outside of these confines, then I'm not a woman leader anymore. I'm a male leader. Male, female, why are you a leader? Why are you in this position? What do you want to achieve? How do you want to achieve it? What's your strategy? What's your plan? How do you review your plan? These should be the issues I think that should occupy us. And not necessarily what whether I fit into this mode or not. Let the public judge you.
Well, so I wanted to ask you a follow-up question about your own experience. So, you know, in class, our Black women in political leadership class, we're kind of talking about, at least within the US, the women political leaders are heavily criticized in the media about their appearance, what they wear. So it takes away from their, like, their political platform. So I would say, from the perspective of Ghana, do you think there's issues with physical appearance for women leaders or politicians? And, you know, Have you had any experiences of people not taking you, I guess, seriously, or not accepting what you have to say because of your appearance of what you wear?
Well, this is a very interesting question. It's a very, very interesting one, about how women are judged differently. Okay. When you have a male running for a position or appointed to a position, nobody asks, whether he is properly groomed or not, whether he's wearing the same coat for 2 weeks or not, whether he's married or not, whether he has children or not, whether he remembers the names of his children or not, whether he knows what his children have eaten or not. Nobody asks that question. Let a woman appear. Then all these things begin. And in fact, I see them as ways in which they keep women out of the limelight. I keep telling young ladies, I'm not saying you should go around looking scruffy. But if you want to spend 2 hours on your makeup and your male counterpart spends 5 minutes and spends the rest of the time on his work, you have lost close to 2 hours. Okay. And yes, it is real. The appearance, your hair, and your, I've had plenty of that. But I keep saying, why am I naked or am I, And really, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. How do I know this? So what am I supposed to do? Perm my hair? I will not perm it because I don't think I should do that. This without prejudice to those who do, but I choose not to. When I went to the University of Cape Coast first, maybe I was the only one in braids on the campus. But finally, more than half the girls ended up wearing braids. And we used to talk about hair because nobody had talked to them about it, about the concept of beauty. So you want to look like something you are not. Is that why you are in the position? Am I a vice chancellor because I have a vision? I'm a vice chancellor because of my fashion. When I mount the stage to speak, do I want people to listen to what I'm saying? I want them to look at what I'm wearing. So as I keep saying, it's not about looking scruffy or anything. But I don't think that the physical appearance should take precedence over what you are going to do in terms of allocation of time, in terms of importance, and so on. Yes, you should look decent. You should, I mean, but I'm not a model. I didn't choose to do modeling. So it's not my job to do that, So, and if people are coming to see what I'm wearing, they should sit at home and check on the net. There are many fashionable things there. They don't have to come to my program. Yeah, they have models there. They can go and look at them. But don't come and say that I'm giving a lecture for an hour, I'm giving a lecture for 45 minutes, and say that you traveled all the way to come and see what I'm wearing. Does this make sense to you? Or you want to come and listen to what I'm saying. We were here when Angela Merkel retired. And the whole world went applauding her. And I was telling my people, if this woman had been a Ghanaian head of state, we may not even we will remember her for what she was wearing. I told them, and I've mentioned that in many public events, to let them know that this kind of pressure is not helpful. So what is it? I should change my clothes every 2 hours. Do I have time? Do I have the time for it? Should I have the time for it? Is that why I came to the position?
No.
How about, is that the impact I should be making? There are models who make impact. Go and look at them. I'm not one of them. I'm here to solve a problem. And I want like minds to come on board. Even those who are not like minds, you come too, because you may rather have the solution. Everybody come. Let's think together. How do you see the problem? How do I see it? Okay. So it's like, oh, and as I tell everybody, nobody's 19 forever. I'm not going to dress like a teenage person because I'm going to address teenage people. Why? That's once upon a time. And I live in a culture where clothing makes a statement. I know my culture. We are more oral, as in AURAL, symbol. We use more symbols, oral language, body language, and so many types of language. In fact, the least important is verbal language. Even the cloth you wear, the pattern in it makes a statement. So it's not like, oh, something is fashionable in somebody's country. Whether it fits me or not, whether it fits my body style or not, I should go and wear it and look ridiculous. I don't think I should be doing that. So those things, you can comment on my appearance. I would like to hope you mean well, but that's not why I'm going to spend 4 hours on my makeup, because I don't have 4 hours for that.
So the next few questions will be, you giving advice to, us younger people who kind of want to follow your steps. So one of the first questions is, how do you balance your professional life and your personal life? What is your advice to young girls today trying to figure out how could they balance their career and their life?
Okay. Again, I've been asked this question several times, and therefore I'll give the usual answer. At every stage in your life, you need to know what your priorities are. Okay? What is important for you now? Going to school, pay attention to it. It doesn't mean you should pay so much attention to your school work that you don't have a friend, you don't go out. I mean, that too is not helpful. But you need to know what is important. You decide you want to have children. It's a beautiful phase in anybody's life. Just remember that children are not children forever. You were a child once. You are not a child anymore. But at the time they are children, they need you. And if it's the time you're going to say, oh, I took them to daycare yesterday, so you should also take them today, the child should not be in the middle of that kind of argument. Do what is in the interest of the child, not in your own interest. And in a couple of years, they don't even want you to help them. They go to boarding school, they don't even want you to come there because then you know what they are up to. So you see that, yes, your role will keep changing. Yes, you are still the parent, your role will keep changing. It's not the same. So I keep saying at the time, and I use my own example. At the time, my own children were very young. I was mostly on campus. I didn't step out. I think that was when I had my first Fulbright. So my youngest child was 8. And even then, I took the 5 month slot, not the 9 month one. But that's me. And I'm not saying everybody should do the same. Okay. So it's a question of what is right. And in terms of practical details, maybe that is also, you also pay a price, And I think that is when I lost my appetite for breakfast because I'm too busy finding out somebody has worn their shoes, somebody has brushed their teeth, and a whole lot of things. And I need to get them to school. And then I forget that, oh, I should also have started to have breakfast. So I started having late breakfast, So, and after a while, as I said, they don't need you to play those rules for them anymore. You can decide that you want to pay for someone to do it. But for myself, I decided that I wanted to be around them at that age. Having studied education and so on, I thought it was important that I did that. And I don't regret it. I'm happy that I did that because then you bond with your children in a way that I think is healthy. Not that I succeeded with everything, but all I'll say that that's one way. But at the same time, too, you have a job. It is the job that is helping you to pay your bills and to take care of your children. One of the things I did with friends, and it started, I was a full-time student in Canada when I had my three babies. So my friends, one from Kenya, the other from Zimbabwe, they also had children. So maybe one Friday, they'll bring their kids to my apartment. And I say, you bring them on Friday and you won't see them till Monday morning after daycare. Okay? And we didn't do it in such a tight way that, oh, I did it this week, so you do it that week. And what I discovered at the time we started, I had one child. And I discovered that when his friends came over, in fact, it was much easier. I could even work because they'd be playing. But it was when he was by himself and then he sees I'm working and I'm not paying attention to him, that he would just be distracting. Okay. So there are all kinds of schemes that you can set up, support each other, support your friendship and support your children if that is the case. You can also have to, you may also have to alter your own schedule. For example, when my kids were little, by 7 they were in their bed, maybe reading till about 8:30 when their lights went off. So once they got into their bed, maybe I go and read a story to them, and then they'll also read their own books. Then I just start my work. Maybe it's about 11 when I'll sleep, you know. So my day shifted. And right now, I'm a very early morning person. And, you know, in the course of the day, I don't do much work, you know. So there are all ways in which you can balance. It takes effort, but then you are balancing, you know, taking care of your own life alone is a full-time job, let alone your partner or your husband. That's a full-time job. Then your children have two, that's two full-time jobs. So you have four full-time jobs going on all the time. So you need to find out which of these full-time jobs can I sooner make part-time job? You know, that's the children. So you spend time with them. They'll become a bit more independent and so on. The partners, I don't want to talk about them now, but you know, you all know what I mean. So you know also that you have a career to grow, but don't begin to see your partner or your children as obstacles. That will give you unnecessary pressure. So you begin to resent even things you are doing for your children because I should rather be at a conference. You know, many conferences will come. Many of them will come. So why this time? You know the child is not feeling very well, and yet you want to leave him with someone else to travel for something else because of your career. The very fact that you left this child will make him even more sick. And you yourself, you are not going to concentrate on what you are doing because you are wondering what's happening to your child. In the end, who has won what? Everybody is lost. So it's a, sometimes you have to look at something very lucrative and let it go, knowing that this cannot be the only chance I'll ever have. You know, but as you know, when it gets to this, it's a very personal decision. I don't think there'll be any how-to book on this. It will be very personal. You consider what's important now. Is it my child? You cannot leave your work because of your child. How will you take care of the child? You need your work to be able to. And it's not always about money that you are working. You are also working to express yourself. You know, work is also a very important form of self-expression. It gives you satisfaction, gives you energy, gives you purpose. So should the child. You know, so I'm using these two examples to show, yes. So you come back from work and you are now going to cook your food. I used to cook my food for the week. Okay, so during the week, it's just a matter of maybe adding something small to what is there. Okay, yeah. And I wanted to cook my own meals. I didn't want to eat food that people have cooked, and I didn't know what had gone into it. Because I kept saying that I'd rather spend the time with my children than the time in the hospital. Okay, so I'll cook at home. I know what I've put in it. If something breaks out in a rush, I know what it is and how to avoid it going forward, rather than something that somebody else has done with a long list of scientific names I don't understand and decide to put this in my body. How do I know what's going right and what's going wrong? But again, this is personal. I'm not casting aspersions on anybody else because we all make the choices to suit what we are doing. But I'm speaking for myself, what I did. And that way, I knew that the food they were eating was balanced. I knew that the food they were eating was nutritious, and so on and so forth. Yes, people will get sick no matter what you do. But my position is to not to wait for problems. Once I can foresee that this is possible, or this problem is possible, I try to stop it. I would not wait till it lands on me before I wonder what to do. The other problems will come when I didn't know where they were coming from. That's fine. But those I can prevent. I didn't think I should play with the options of either doing it myself or not. So I think that in terms of balancing, it's a question of what's important. Who, what are you balancing with? It's your job and what? It's your job and who? Okay, if it's a human being, that human being must try to be as reasonable as you are. And you must also be flexible. because that human being may also have his job or his career. Okay, so it's not that we have entered a boxing ring or we have entered some competitive context and we are just throwing the punches at each other. Then forget it. It doesn't make sense, because then you'll be stressed all the time and nobody needs stress. Okay.
You know, they said that, you know, Africa has had a few women presidents by now. So like, as advice, what do you think, you know, future women leaders could do to enter history and change the future of Africa, or I guess more specifically, to change the future of Ghana?
That's a tough call, but I think it's possible. Again, you look at your history, you've had women leaders in almost every sphere of life. So you need to ask yourself, so what has gone wrong? Once you are able to identify what has gone wrong, you may be able to proffer the solutions. When you are the first in any situation, it puts a lot of pressure on you. Many are looking at you to succeed. Many more are looking at you to fail, not because they wish you ill, but because they just haven't seen it for a long time, or they don't even think it is possible. So you have to believe in yourself that, yes, you can do it. You must have the confidence to step forth and be able to execute your agenda. And in the process, remember where women have been in our recent history. I call 400 years ago our recent history. We were not created along with slavery or colonialism. We were here long before. So it is possible that you can do it. Take inspiration from them. And I always also take inspiration from those who've come before me. You know, when Ghana had its first woman parliamentarian in 1951, and I asked myself, so if today we are complaining about discrimination and so on, I don't know what it was like for her then. But as I told you, I've had many, many male supporters. One of my biggest fans was my grandfather, who had never been to school, but who was just so excited about me in school and what I was learning. Mm-hmm. He'd always ask, what are you learning? What are you doing? And so on and so forth. Said, are you learning all you can learn? And at that time, I didn't even understand what he meant, you know. So yes, we've had a certain history of slavery is not a cup of tea. We've had a certain history of colonialism is not another cup of tea. And in all of these difficult times, we've had the men being prioritized. So it has become almost accepted that no, the women cannot do it. And not because they've seen us come and not do it, but because they just feel it's not possible because they have never seen it before. Okay. So when you have all these in mind and you are put in any position of authority or any position of leadership, you have to be conscious of where you think your agency, your country can be as different from what it is. You should know that the expectations are very, very high. In fact, in most cases, they are unrealistic. That you've had males for how many hundreds of years, some have succeeded, some have failed, but you come in one woman and you take a false step, it will be interpreted to mean that, oh, none of the women can do it. So there's all of that in the mix. When you keep talking about it, I think it helps. You keep raising the consciousness of your listeners to what this position means, what you can all do together. I think that it helps. So it's not like we are going to change all our history in 4 years. It's not done anyway. Destroying something is very easy. If between the time we started our discussion and now we called something to come and raise our buildings to the ground, it will be rubbles. But if between that time, you can't get anybody to put that building back up where it was, let alone even put up a better building. So I'm using this analogy to let us know that the pressures on us are very, very high and we need every support we can get. We need every support, not in exploitative ways, but in ways that help other women who are not in a similar situation and who may need us to impact their lives. You know, we've just suffered for too long. All of us, our men, our women, our children. So it's not a gender war in my part of the world. That's the way I see it. The children are suffering. The men are suffering. All of us. Look at our relationship with the people we trade with. Why are we still selling primary commodities? Why are we so rich and so poor? We have very, very huge battles to build. And and together, I'm sure we can make a difference. But to expect that that difference should come because there's a woman, then everybody just sits back and watches. That change will not come. Everybody must be on board. Yeah.
Wow. Look, that was amazing. I don't even have anything else to say after that. I mean, I guess as the last question, you know, is there like maybe any other advice you could give to the next generation of leaders, or maybe something you wish someone told you as you were starting your, you know, your leadership journey?
Actually, I keep telling people that I never set out to become a vice chancellor.
Ah, really? Okay.
No. When I went to the University of Cape Coast, I was a lecturer. My job description was clear to me. I didn't know what the vice chancellor did. And I didn't care. You know, I was there to teach. I was there to do research. I was there to do community work. And I enjoyed doing that. I met the vice chancellor. I had met him once because he interviewed me. But after that, I never went to see what he was. I was just doing my work. Then from one level to the other, you become a senior lecturer, you become an associate professor through my research, through my publications. And interestingly, all the positions I had been, whether as head of department or as dean, it just happened that I was the most qualified at the time. But I applied to become vice chancellor. I competed to become vice chancellor because I was tired of the things I was seeing on the campus. I was fed up with the advice I was giving at the various boards and committees, and nobody was paying attention to me. So I thought that that position would give me the opportunity to put into practice all the things I've been talking about. And so I think we're able to make a difference. Okay. So in terms of advice, or, you know, what I should have had, I don't think obstacles will come and nobody can tell you what the obstacle will be. Okay, but you also know it. You are studying in a class, you are the only major student among boys. They make all those comments. And you just tell them, hey, don't worry, I don't want any of you. What's your problem? You know, and they say, oh, you are saucy. Or so, hey, I'm saucy, so what? I'm not your child, you know. So you have to be firm about what you are trying to achieve and go on to achieve. Nobody can prepare you adequately for the future. I don't think so. Okay, but there are a few things you need to know. And I think you need to believe in yourself. You need to be passionate about what you want. And you need to ensure that what you are doing is going to be of benefit for others. And you must also understand that wherever you are, however much you are complaining, you're also better off than many people. And you know them. You are better off. Yes, I always complain about everything. My pay was low and so on. But people are getting much less. And they were not stealing from anyone. Some were not getting anything. So if you're in a position to affect their lives, you must put those people as the front burner of your attention. And make sure that, yes, I may not have solved all the problems, but maybe I've affected one or two. And hopefully the one coming after me will also affect the third and the fourth one, and so on and so forth, you know. So, and you just trust in your strength, trust in the people around you, listen to advice, you know, work with people. Don't surround yourself with only people who think like you. I think that would be very boring. Bring in those who disagree. Just have the patience and respect to listen to them. And sometimes they are the ones who are right. Of all the experiences, the one I've enjoyed most was when I was on the executive board of UNESCO. Because at that board, we didn't vote. It wasn't a matter of voting. We thought we have failed if we voted. We will reach consensus no matter how many days. We'll be there till 2 a.m. because one country disagrees with something. And we need to hear the country out. And, you know, when all 53 countries have agreed on one thing, and one country disagrees. By the time we listen to that side, we've lost 20 of the people on the other side. And, you know, it was frustrating, but it was also a lot of fun.
Thank you so much to Miss Nana Opuku Ajiman for joining us today on this podcast. I hope listeners got to enjoy her wisdom and hope to see you on the next episode.